Hey, friends, it's your intrepid warrior, David Landuli, with fundraisingleadership.org, and I'm here with somebody, and the drum roll, please.
Somebody. I'm just somebody today. Okay, whatever. Hi, friends from Fundraising Leadership. It's Margaret Katz Can.
Somebody special, Margaret. You
Oh, thank
see
you.
there I was putting on the icing like a little thick there for you, because that's going to be the topic of our
It's
conversation
true. That's right. Today we're talking about thick icing, aren't we?
today. So I just layered it on there for you, a little oozy, little practicing empathy as opposed to being empathetic.
So the idea for our topic today came because David and also our other partner, Michelle, and I are doing kind of a refresh on this program that we spend a lot of time talking about, the Positive Intelligence Program. And we were listening to the leader and instructor of the program, Shirzad Shamin, talk about sales. And he used this term that I had never actually, I think he was talking about influencing. And he used a term that I had never heard before where people in sales, and I'm going to go ahead and add, and fundraising are taught how to have empathy techniques. And I
Empathy
thought my brain
technique.
was going to explode. I'm like, what the hell is an empathy technique? Of course, I know. And I'm like, wait, that's what people are taught. So I had a moment there. I thought we need to talk about this. This must be discussed.
It's like when you layer on the icing so thick. That's an empathy technique, right? People, including you, Margaret, I suspect, could, and I was fooling around a little bit there, and can smell that stuff from a mile away. Like when you're trying to use an empathy technique.
Well, let's just talk for a minute. I mean, I'm sure that Shirzad Shamin, who I always call Shirzad, even though I don't really know him, but in any event, he was referring to some specific things. So in case our listeners maybe let's just talk about what would be an empathy technique.
Be like what's coming to mind, it would be like Bill Clinton saying, "I feel your pain."
Feel your pain. Yeah, there is, which feels a lot closer to gaslighting than to empathy. Yeah, and I think for probably for fundraisers, it looks like kind of going in with a list of questions, right? Like, oh, I'm gonna appear like I'm curious, and so I'm gonna come in with a list of all the things that I should ask this person.
Could be one way of expressing empathy, or there's a difference even there between being genuinely curious and having a list of questions to look like you're being curious. Regarding Bill Clinton, look, just for those of you in the audience who remember him, I mean, it's at some level we all can exercise this. It's a natural, almost human emotion, if I could call it that, empathy, like actually feeling someone else's emotions or pain. And I'm sure he has that down too. It's just that in my recollection of it, either the way it was characterized or the way he expressed it seems somewhat ingenuine.
Right, maybe more along the spectrum towards manipulative than
Yes.
heartfelt.
Yes. So this is kind of what we're getting at the heart of is actually being empathetic, actually feelings. Actually, it takes something to allow yourself to, in genuine empathy, I believe, it takes something to really allow yourself to feel someone else's pain or emotion. And that could be on the positive side of the emotional spectrum as well. Like joy. Some people, you know, foreboding joy, what Brené Brown talks about, right? She would always cut it off,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there
So,
are, there are people who walk around just exuding sunlight from them, right? I mean, not every day, all day long, but there are people where they walk into a room and their joy is just palpable, and it's fun to just let it wash over you, right?
Right?
And
Yeah.
similarly with emotions that are more uncomfortable for us, right? When
Yeah.
somebody is in a space of grief or frustration or heartbreak or anger. Who, I don't know about anger. You know that I want to feel other people's anger.
Well, see, this is the thing about it. Yeah, that's I'm glad you said that because this is where maybe you get stopped, and we all gonna get stopped somewhere. Like, no, I'm not gonna like. By the way, I think I don't know that I've ever gotten anger. Anger is one of those emotions I've been working on for many years, and I don't think you've ever experienced my Hulk rage, but I would expect it would be very unpleasant for you. But I also know you that you could probably withstand it,
Well, I've
and.
had a lot of I've the reason I don't like it is I've had a lot of practice withstanding people's anger.
Yeah, and I'm not proud of it. I mean, look, I've written about this many, many times. It's gonna there's an essay in my forthcoming book about, about anger and skillfully using anger because it's there as an emotion. It has a useful purpose.
Yes.
It's just that some of us, myself included, are unskillful in its. Can I can be I'm becoming more skillful in its application, but I know you very well. So some people get stopped at someone grieving, and so for example, if you're a fundraiser and you're meeting with a donor, and your donor is experiencing a loss and has a breakdown. In front of you, and you just want to step over that. Now, Margaret is actually quite empathic, as am I. I've come to learn. And I was having, a meltdown yesterday over a very sad incident in my life, the suicide of my sister and my father's. Inability to actually, he was quite hard on himself for like 40 years over that, and I was feeling very emotional about it yesterday, and you were just with me throughout, Margaret, and that's true empathy, like just listening and being with someone. And so I really appreciate you for your empathic listening yesterday. There was no faking it in that. And it really helped me, help support me yesterday as I was dealing with some of my own grief.
Well, I'm glad that that was true and that I was able to offer that as a gift to you. Something you're saying, though, that I think is important is empathy is it is about feeling other people's feelings and pain and emotions and joy and wherever they are. But I think
Love.
there's a way that we can feel it, right? Which I think both you and I sometimes do, where I walk in the room and somebody's anxious and I'm like, I feel nervous, but I don't know why, right? But there's this other way that we can skillfully do it, which is just to hold space for it, right? Not to rush it, just to be able to witness the person. You know, I can't step into your life and know what it was like for you or for your father when these events happened, but I can just hold space for you to write that book within that space, you know, how it was for you. And I think that's a space of, yes, a very true empathy. I do. I feel sad. It's a sad story, you know, sad and heartbreaking. It's more than sad. It's heartbreaking and tragic.
Yeah, I was expressing a little heartbreak yesterday for sure. And I Of course, we are trained, you and I, how to be with others who are expressing and exhibiting difficult emotions. And that's part of the gift in true empathy, as opposed to faking empathy.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I mean, what, it's not that you might not, if you're having trouble accessing your own true empathy, with empathy for those of you who have that experience, it's because it's uncomfortable, right? It's because they're big feelings. They feel messy. It's hard to know if, gosh, if we go into that room of grief, how will we ever get out again, right? Like if you're having a conversation with somebody. And so I think then an empathy technique might be just to offer some words of condolence and change the subject,
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
That might be the
Yeah. I think
alternative.
for a long time in my life, that would have been me.
Yeah, where you would have
You
said, I'm
know.
so sorry for your loss. Have you thought about what you're going to order for lunch? Like
Yeah,
something like
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I fess up to that for sure. But there is a what I've come to learn about human beings and about myself is we all have this capacity at some level, including narcissists and out there who supposedly and sociopaths who supposedly, like I heard it said, somewhere, like, well, even Hitler loved his dog.
I'm not
Seriously.
even gonna, I, okay.
I know,
I'm
I'm
nervous
just
talking
saying
about,
that
but
at
yeah.
some level, all
Right.
right?
Yes. This
At
idea of
some
incapable, right, is,
right.
yeah.
But so there may be a spectrum and of how strongly you might feel someone else's emotions. And it turns out that Margaret and I feel those, our nervous systems are such that maybe they just get lit up a little bit more, or they're more sensitive to others' emotions. And in my own work in this area, I realized that I was a pretty sensitive little kid. But then the world happened, and you have to behave this way, and you can't talk about these things. And then I became like this, I don't know, some kind of blanket or some kind of shield or something came around me where, I learned not to really be with other people when they're experiencing, even though I might be present, my body might be there, but I'm checked out,
Yeah. And I think most people, right, over time learn strategically to put those filters up, right? Because it was adaptive when they were kids, because sometimes it's adaptive now. But if you're truly a leader or you want to be an incredible fundraiser, I think the work is to dismantle some of those filters so that you can really, really connect with people.
Right. And we're, there's this movement that's been afoot for quite some time called, emotional intelligence. And I would say some of that is just group speak. Like, I think organizations bring consultants in so that they can learn empathy techniques so they could show that they're being more emotionally intelligent. And what we know from our work with leadership teams is that that's good talk, but in practice, it's maybe not, it's only about skin deep.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're learning, or one of the other things that I've learned from the positive intelligence program, is this idea of mirroring that we do in our brains, that actually we're wired biologically to respond to what other people have going on, which of course makes sense because once upon a time we lived in caves and, we needed to be woken up if the saber-toothed tiger came to get us, right? So we were programmed and evolved actually to feel other feelings, to feel anxiety
Including
or
fear,
fear,
including fear.
yeah,
Yeah,
of other people
exactly.
who are near us. And so, yes, I find if I am near a person who's sad, like my eyes prickle, like as if I'm going to also cry, even if I don't have any idea who the person is or what's going on for them. Like, I do think we're wired to be very, very connected to other people in ways
Yeah.
of empathy. But most of us learn to like stop that. Don't do that. Right.
Yeah, I would say my experience of organizational life for many decades was that that was not welcomed in the workplace. Now you may have been in a kinder, gentler organization and the Community Foundation of Boulder. But as I was sharing with Margaret the day before we recorded this podcast, I worked in a couple of organizations that were not so kind and gentle, hard on problems and hard on people too.
Yeah.
And some of these other ways we sabotage ourselves and sabotage our willingness to feel warmth and affection for other human beings, which would be a, live in the land of empathy, is, our perfectionist, our controller, the way, we expect everyone to do it right. And then criticize them when they don't, quote unquote, do it right. That's very hard on people.
Yes. In one of my very, very first coaching curriculum courses, accepted the challenge of somebody to embrace my own mess. Like I was very hard on myself, and I still have a print of Oscar the Grouch to remind me, like, this guy lives in a trash can and he's the grumpiest person or Muppet in the world, and everybody still loves him, right? Like, it wouldn't be Sesame Street without him. So, embracing our inner mess, and I know this is a topic that, it is hard to be compassionate for others if we are super, super hard on ourselves, because then we end up judging them instead of being warm.
And even there, paradoxically, for those of us, including myself, who up until recently could be very, very hard, I could be very hard on myself. And yet, I used to be able to find it easier to generate empathy and compassion for other people than for myself. So that if you're in the audience and that resonates with you, know that you are not alone in this regard. And I think to the extent that you can be kind and gentle with yourself during difficult times, the more that grows, the more you can radiate that out toward other people and have develop a greater capacity to feel that warmth, kindness. We might even say love towards other people.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the techniques is to imagine the other person as a child. Sometimes if you're super frustrated with another person, and this is less about somebody inviting you into a hard thing that's going on for them. This is finding empathy when people aren't actually all that nice, right?
Yes. No, that's so this is again, paradoxically, a technique that could help you generate genuine empathy, which is to just imagine what that person's life must been like as a child, or imagine their inner child, and then you can maybe generate a spark of empathy for them. When I'm having a hard time, when I see somebody being cruel, critical, unkind. I think to myself, wow, what happened to them in their life that has them showing up like that right now? And that's when I can start to generate some compassion for that person. And that's my, that's me trying to, because I know the initial reaction would be to just judge that person.
What a jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, what a jerk, what an asshole, and I see a lot of that in society now, and this unwillingness to give each other a break, that'd be another form of empathy or compassion, is just to give someone a break,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know, give yourself a break. Yeah, those are not techniques. Those are genuine access points. So I would call that like an access point to empathy. Yeah.
Right. To get whatever part of your brain that holds that lit up so that it can
Yeah.
join the conversation. Yeah.
And let's it is, and yes, Margaret, it is in the brain where the mirror neuron system lives. But it's also in our heart, literally in our heart now. We know now there's this connection between the brain and the heart. And so when you do feel that warmth in your chest, it's because of that brain heart connection. So, there is something to be said for why we think of this as a heart-based practice. And it is a practice.
It is a practice. Yes.
Yeah. And for some of us, we need more practice than others.
True. Some of us need more practice than others. And I do think, again, for many people, the biggest fear is that it's going to be awkward. You know, again, back to you're speaking to somebody and they're having an emotional retelling of a story or space that they have gone to, and we go to an empathy technique instead of true empathy because we're afraid that if we go in, you know, true empathy, it's like the maze room and we're never going to get out again, right? I think like, or it's going to be an abyss and you're not going to be able to. I think there's this feeling of like the bigness of these hard feelings. That's so scary for people. Like, how do I get back out again?
Yeah, that's there's some fear in there for sure. Like it takes, I've said this to you, Margaret, and others many times. It takes some courage, at least when you've made a choice like, okay, I am going to be more empathic and more compassionate in my life. You have to really summon up some courage to just allow yourself to be with someone who's having a difficult moment and not get, wiped out by that wave or sucked under with the undertow, right? And just be there for them. And if your own tears come up, that's okay. Like to be okay with that.
Yes, I'm raising my hand. Sympathetic crier right here. That's me. Doesn't take much. Yeah.
And for those of you who are fundraisers in the audience, or are just leaders in general, I mean, think about what impact you could have with your donors or with people in your organization on the leadership team if you would just to start to open up a little bit in this way, in a very genuine way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And David, you said this at the beginning, but I'm going to say it again. Like most people have a pretty fine-tuned BS meter for techniques, for something that feels like a technique rather than something that feels authentic. So they know when you don't really mean it.
Yeah, this is not about somehow practicing empathy techniques so you can look good and avoid looking bad to your leadership team or your donor.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
Right.
maybe you go into the meeting with an intention of curiosity and one question, and then you challenge yourself to not bring the list of questions, but actually listen and ask the next appropriate question, as opposed to, you know, making it more like an interview of some sort.
Well, one, I like what you're saying. Like you said, meeting. So one place that leaders can exercise empathy and listening is in team meetings. So, for example, we used to do a practice when I was leading a fundraising team of clearing. And this was like on our weekly staff meeting, and we would hold our weekly staff meeting in the early part of the week, and people would be coming in. It was on a Monday or Tuesday, and people would be coming in with life happening over the weekend, right? And all kinds of life happens over the weekend. And sometimes people would show up with, very difficult things happening in their lives over the weekend. And just creating the space for listening, as a leader, you say, you can come in and you can share, and no one's going to judge you. And and you'll find that people really respond to that sort of environment. And they can, if they can clear something that's been on their minds, and the team can just listen and empathically and not judge them and make them wrong, or boy, they can get. They can actually clear stuff and get present for what is at hand.
Wait, you mean this could be more productive?
This could actually be
All
for a
this gushy
productive thing.
feeling stuff.
Like I know yesterday, you and I had this conversation about my father and my sister, and I don't know how it came up, but somehow it came up, and in that moment, I could not do the work at hand. I could
Yeah.
not engage with you in the work at hand. And yet, after you just created the space for me to share, a very difficult experience in my life and have some grieving over it, I was able to get present and we got the work done.
We got the work done. We didn't even run over. Yeah.
So that can be the power of this. If you're looking for productivity, if you feel like if your rational analytical mind says, well, what's the benefit of this? Then there, we just gave it to you.
There it is. Yeah. So just a little urge today to talk about bringing your heart to work. You.
Bring your heart with your brain.
Correct. We don't want you
I
to
think.
throw your brain under the bus. We're a big fan of brains,
Right.
but it's good to also bring your heart with you.
Okay, I think with that, we will sign off. Bring your heart to work, and we'll see you next time.